You may be seated. Good morning. We are here today on case 12-0019, Charles E. Wilson et al. Versus Governor John Kasich et al. For the relators, Mr. Hamilton.
Good morning. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. Article 11 of the Ohio Constitution imposes a series of detailed neutral restrictions on Ohio's reapportionment process, like constitutional restrictions limiting government power to restrain speech or to conduct unreasonable searches. Article 11 places certain constitutional restrictions on governmental power, in this case, on the apportionment board's authority to apportion seats in the state legislature. Specifically, it mandates substantial equality between House districts and respect for county and political subdivisions. As the record before the court demonstrates, respondents in this case repeatedly and dramatically violated these restrictions in the 2011 redistricting plan. This action, filed pursuant to this court's original jurisdiction under Article 11, Section 13, seeks relief from this court. The purpose of the restrictions imposed by Article 11 was, as this court recognized in State v. Bricker, the prevention of gerrymandering. Restrictions on splitting or dividing counties or political subdivisions are indeed a common feature of state constitutions. They're included in the constitutions of California, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Maine, Maryland, Idaho, and the state of Washington. The United States Supreme Court, in the landmark case of Reynolds versus Sims, recognized that respecting county lines restricts opportunities for gerrymandering, noting that, quote, a state may legitimately desire to construct districts along political subdivision lines to deter the possibilities of gerrymandering. Here, for precisely the same purpose, Article 11 shifted responsibility from the legislature to a bipartisan board, imposed detailed restrictions, and mandated respect for county and political subdivision boundaries. Unfortunately, the adopted plan from the apportionment board repeatedly and significantly violated the provisions of Article 11. Splitting more than 250 counties and political subdivisions across Ohio, far more than were actually necessary.
Counsel, I'd like to just stop you right there. Is there a list somewhere in the record of those splits, or is it just simply have to sort of dig through the record to find it?
It's actually in the apportionment board reapportionment plan, and if I don't have the citation directly, but if you look through the plan, it identifies by district the specific counties and political subdivisions, and you can see from the list directly whether it's been split or not.
Thank you.
And counsel, with respect to your main argument, which is the splitting of the units, what portion of the Constitution, of Article 11, what portion of the language are you referring to that specifies that that is a prohibition? I know there are other, you have cited some other states, Colorado and Pennsylvania, I think, where there's a very clear language that says this shall not be done. But since it seems that the basic argument relates to that, what is the exact constitutional language?
Your Honor, it's Article 7, Section A, B, and C provide the rules. Section 7A provides, and I quote, the boundary lines of districts shall be drawn as to delineate an area containing one or more whole counties. 7B then says if that's not possible, then the district shall be composed of adding political subdivisions together, and the constitutional language in Section 7B of Article 11 delineates exactly how that's to be done, in what order. Then Section 7C says if that can't be done, then you have to divide a political subdivision, and it specifies exactly in what order the political subdivisions are to be
divided. So it's an extrapolation of the language that you're talking about. You're looking at all three divisions and then coming up with the no splitting provision.
Yeah, that's right, Your Honor. And that's the way that as the apportionment board went through its job, I think that's the way they read it as well, that you start with whole counties to the extent that you can form a district from a whole county, then you shouldn't
split.
And
you talk about to the extent that you can, and the language of feasibility, doesn't that suggest a discretion exists in the board when they're determining a plan?
There's no discretion. Well, yes, Your Honor, there is some level of discretion, of course, that because in some instances you can't avoid splitting a county. But if you can avoid splitting a county, there is no discretion. The Constitution is quite clear that the district shall be formed from whole counties. So, for example, if you have a county that fits the ideal population of a House district, then the district shall be formed from that county. There's no discretion to split that county to achieve non-constitutional goals, such as partisan advantage in one case or another. And the examples we gave in the merits briefing are good examples of the violation of that provision.
Let me ask you this. In the abstract, many counties, let's talk about the McDonald plan. In comparison, many of the counties would be such that they wouldn't be split. But yet at some point, you've got to split counties. And who picks what counties get split?
Your Honor, if you can, if you don't have to split a county, then it can't be split under the constitutional language. And sure, there are going to be some where it's
there's some in the McDonald plan that wouldn't have to be split if you chose other ones to split. But ultimately, there's going to be some counties that you're going to have to split. Even standing alone, though, looking at it, it wouldn't have to be split. And what I'm getting at is, can we look at each of these districts separately without looking at the whole thing?
Well, you have to look at the whole thing as well as look at each individual county. And yes, Your Honor, there are going to be instances where there's going to be a trade-off between splitting this county and that county. And as Your Honor correctly noted, the McDonald plans, both variations, split 30 counties along the way. But again, looking at the state as a whole, they were able to accomplish, consistently with the mandate of Article 11, reapportionment, splitting only 30 counties instead of 50. And whatever discretion the apportionment board has between the 30, whether you split this county or that county, the board does not have the authority to split 50 instead of 30. If 30 is possible, then 30 is the requirement under the Article 11.
So, Counsel, you're saying that there's a constitutional mandate to minimize the number of splits. It's not that splits can't occur, but there is no discretion between arbitrarily splitting counties and the obligation to minimize the splits of those counties.
Exactly so, Chief Justice O'Connor. And a good example is House District 70. The board's plan included all of Ashland County, a portion of Medina County, and then also split Holmes County. But there was no reason to split Holmes County. The county itself urged the board not to do so. And the McDonald map was able to draw plans that included House District 70 without splitting Holmes County and without splitting any other counties.
Counsel, your principal constitutional objection is that there were splits in political subdivisions that were not, there were a larger number of splits. Is it just counties? Could you take us through? I think your supplemental brief walked through in concise order the pecking order. So it's counties first.
That's correct.
And then what's next? Is it townships?
Next is townships, then cities, then city wards, and the as we
and are the grossest violations in your view, at the county level, or are there, can you quantify numerically the violations at the township, city, and ward level that you deem unnecessary and therefore violate the Constitution in terms of your...
I can, Your Honor.
Yeah.
The unnecessary splits that offend the Constitution principally would be the county splits, because there's a priority in the Constitution. Section 7A, right. Then 7B, then 7C places the highest constitutional value on avoiding a split of a county. The adopted plan split 50 counties, and the McDonald alternatives demonstrate that only 30 were necessary.
Now, the apportionment board did not have the McDonald alternative in
That's
front
correct,
of it.
Your Honor. That's correct. The McDonald plan, just to be clear, is not offered as a substitute or as a better
right.
plan or the best plan. It's as, just simply as evidence that it's possible to draw a plan consistent with our Constitution.
In your discovery efforts, were you able to determine whether the board and its contractors who provided the staffing for this had in front of them for consideration plans that... minimized the county splits, perhaps not the same way the McDonald plan did, but in some fashion, got it down to a much lower number of county splits.
Well, I don't know the direct answer to that question. I do know, and I can point the court.
Well, did you seek to discover that?
Yes, we sought to discover all of the information before the board. What we saw was the board listed in its own analysis the counties that had to be split because of population reasons, and then those that were split that didn't have to be split. And the record is rife with evidence that the board took into account political considerations, adding portions of counties that didn't need to be split for the purpose of assisting or increasing partisan advantage. So if I might, I'd like to answer.
I one further question. In terms of this pecking order, there's also a provision in the Constitution that's fairly far down in the article that says, to the extent possible, the lines should follow, the district should follow what's in place at the present time. How does that fit in terms of your view of the way we should read the Constitution?
And it's important to read the reasonably consistent language. That's Article 7D and comes in last. And it says, and I quote, in making a new apportionment, district boundaries established by the preceding apportionment shall be adopted to the extent reasonably consistent with the requirements of Section 3 of this article. So the reasonably consistent language is comparative language, of course, and it's referring to the population requirements, the ideal population requirements. And Section 3 of Article 11 defines what that population, ideal population is. And the ideal population should be between 95 and 105% of that ideal number. And so
well, the Constitution mandates that you start with certain counties that fit within that, and you have, what, just a couple of those in the state or just one?
There was one that fit within 95 and 105%, and that's not an issue before this court.
So, and that's where you have to start, or that's a given?
That's where you start.
Right.
So how many of the decennial counties that were split last time are split this time of that 50?
I can't answer the question, Your Honor. I don't know the answer. But to answer Justice Pfeiffer's question with respect to the number of subdivisions that were split, there were 105 townships that were split, 58 cities, and 41 city wards split, in addition to the 50 counties. And the McDonald alternative plans demonstrate that a far lower number needed to be split. The McDonald plan split only 21 or 22, depending on which variation. Townships versus 105, 34 or 37 cities versus 58, and 10 city wards versus 41. So across the constitutional provisions of Article 7, the McDonald plan was able to, without regard to partisanship, following just the mandates of the Constitution.
So where, in your opinion, does subparagraph D fit in? So if we are required through paragraph A and B to keep counties whole, but we're also required under subsection D to look at the last decennial lines and to use that as a starting point, how do you weight those two?
Well, you start with subsection A. And then proceed to subsection B, and then proceed to subsection D. C, and then D is last. And the structure of section 7 mandates that. It actually is listed in priority order. So you keep. And again, the language is instructive. In making a new apportionment board, district boundaries established by the preceding apportionment board shall be adopted. It's mandatory language. If reasonably consistent with the requirements of Section 3 of this article. So as long, of course, if it's not splitting county lines or political subdivisions and the county falls within the population boundaries articulated in Section 3, then the county should be left alone. And there's some good examples in the briefing. House District 91, the old House District 86, The existing district was composed of three whole counties, Clinton, Highland, and Pike. After the 2010 census, the population of this district was within 2% of the ideal, so easily within the 5% range and identified in Section 3.
Although, Council, isn't it Section 10 that talks about the ordering of how this is to be done? When you look at 3 and the section that Justice McGee Brown was speaking of, that's in Section 7, which is not a priority or a sequential section. The sequential section is in 10, Section 10.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Section 10 is a procedural, this is how it's done. First you do the largest county, then you move to the second county, and so on. But there's no substantive requirement of whether you're respecting a county line or not. That's you have to read Section 10 together with Section 3, of course, the population requirement, and Section 7, A, B, C, and D. But Section 10 is a procedural requirement of the order in which the counties are to be drawn.
Could I ask you a question about the McDonald plan? Because you did bring it up and you talked about what it's being offered for, the idea that, in your view, the divisions can be done without violating the Constitution. You know that respondents have suggested that the McDonald plan itself violates the Constitution in other ways. Would you dispute their response?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I don't think there's any in the exchange, and the exchange of briefing was helpful in illuminating that point. I don't think there's any specific constitutional violation that's been identified in the McDonald plan. Obviously, both the McDonald plans as well as the board plans split certain counties and certain subdivisions because they had to be. And the framers of the Constitution recognized that certain counties and political subdivisions would have to be. But the whole point of Article 11 is to minimize that. And there's good reason for that because counties and political subdivisions all work together. People in those counties or political subdivisions have common interests. And drawing House and Senate districts that keep them together make a lot of sense because they make the functioning of the government easier. And, of course,
you're not suggesting that we have to consider the McDonald plan as against the plan submitted by the apportionment board, are you?
No, I'm only suggesting that the McDonald plan should be reviewed as evidence that it is possible to comply with.
Isn't the question for us whether or not the plan submitted by the apportionment board is in conformity with the Constitution?
That is exactly the question that is presented, Your Honor. And the McDonald plans are helpful evidence on that
so
point.
So we could give some weight, but not much, to another plan that wasn't submitted by the apportionment board, because the issue here is whether or not the apportionment board plan is constitutional, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly the question before you. But I guess the point would be you absolutely can consider the McDonald plan as evidence that the adopted plan is unconstitutional, and that's exactly the kind of evidence been presented in this redistricting cycle in Pennsylvania, Colorado.
The difficulty I have with your argument is that
as you responded to Justice Lansinger, and you continue to cite subsection 7 of Article 11, for example, in paragraph D, it says, in making the apportionment, the boundary shall be drawn to the extent reasonably consistent with the requirements of 3.
That's right.
Doesn't that vest discretion in the apportionment board? And aren't they the elected persons who have exercised it?
No, the reasonably consistent language, reasonably consistent with the population requirements. In other words, if the population
They've exercised their discretion to draw those districts reasonably consistent with the population requirements in Article subsection 3.
But that's not what the language says. The language says the lines of the prior apportionment board shall be adopted so long as the prior apportionment board lines are...
So you don't read to the extent reasonably consistent or as can be feasibly attained as exercising any discretion in the judgment of those members who have been elected to the apportionment board?
Two different questions there, Your Honor. The with respect to Section 7D, to the extent reasonably consistent, is modifying the remainder of that sentence, and you can't read that phrase out of context. And in context, it's saying reasonably consistent with the population requirements of
the
Article 3.
The requirements of Section 3 of this article.
That's right.
It says.
And feasibly, the feasible language in section 7 does indeed impart the apportionment board with some level of discretion at that level, at whether to split this county or that county. So, for example, in the McDonald plan, if the apportionment board can split 30 other counties instead of the 30 counties that either of the McDonald plan split, then they have the discretion to do that in achieving other goals. What they don't have the discretion to do is split 250 counties and political subdivisions versus 95.
Let me take it to another area that's problematic for me. Maybe you can help me understand. If we would agree with your position that the plan that was submitted by the apportionment board is not in conformity with the Constitution, what would you have us do?
The remedy is contained in Article 13 of Article 11. It would be a remand to the apportionment board with directions to redraw the plan consistent with the mandates of the Constitution.
The difficulty I have with that is one member of the board, Mr. Butish, is not before our court because only 4 members of the apportionment board have been named as parties. So how could we, and the board, by the way, hasn't been named at all. So how can we order the apportionment board to do anything when they haven't been named, the board hasn't been named, and all of the board members haven't been named?
There's no requirement in Section 13 that the board be named or all of the board members be named. And in Voinovich,
would you name 2 of them?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Why can you name 4 and have us have full jurisdiction over the board? I don't get that.
Well, Article 13 of this court provides this court with original jurisdiction over this action and states no requirement, nor has any prior decision of this court ever stated a requirement that all the members of the board be named. And indeed, it would be an odd situation to name Leader Butish, who objected vehemently to what the board did here.
Every case that we have had has had all the members of the board or the board itself named. This is the first time we've never had all 5 members of the board before the court. And if we would remand it, would Mr. Butish be part of that, as he's not a party here?
Yes, Your Honor. Under the original jurisdiction of the court has the power to, under Article Section 13, Article 11, to remand the matter to the board for redrawing of the plan.
What would be the thinking in not naming him?
Your Honor, he is he objected to the plan.
But he is still part of the apportionment board, is he not?
He is indeed, Your Honor.
So we have 80% of the apportionment board before us. We don't have the full board.
You have 4 of the 5 members of the apportionment board, Your Honor, and you have jurisdiction.
Counsel, before you sit down, there's fair amount of evidence that, and no surprise, that the apportionment board consultants attempted to draw the map in a fashion that would advantage their political party. There's no reference or no prohibition or no guidance in the Constitution, is there, that prohibits that effort, or is there?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that there is in the very structure of the Constitution. Article 11 begins with an admonition that the board shall meet and redraw the plans in accordance with this article. And as the court in Bricker and the court in Reynolds versus Sims indicated, respect for county lines, the whole point of that is to prevent gerrymandering. But even if there isn't an express prohibition on considering political factors, there is certainly no argument to be had that that political partisan advantage can be used as an excuse to violate the express provisions of the Constitution.
Okay, that, yeah, I understand that. But would you agree that if they go in a room or wherever they go, sit down at a computer, and to have a program, a sophisticated program that says, here are the mandates of the Constitution, and here's the pecking order established in the Constitution. Now, give us as many different maps as you can, minimizing the county splits, minimizing all of that. And they get 10 different maps. The computer gives them that. Then they sit down and start looking at partisan indexes and select the map that is most beneficial to their party. Is there any argument that you have that says that's impermissible?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, I think the structure of Article 11 and Section 7 specifically is designed to put a brake on that and to prohibit express political gerrymandering. And but even if not, I mean, in your hypothetical, if it minimized and all of the county splits and it was even and they were choosing between maps and one was partisan advantage and one was not, I mean, my position is that that Article 11 forbids that sort of decision making. But in that case, I wouldn't have the fallback argument that you can't violate some other provision. So that might be, if this court finds there's no express political prohibition on political decision making, then that would be a far different case.
Under Article 11, where is an express prohibition?
A prohibition on political decision making?
Yeah. Where is an express one in Article 11?
It's not express, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I misspoke if I said that. It's inherent in the structure of the statute.
Okay.
Counsel, one final thing for me before you sit down, and that is numerically, did you do a comparison on the splits in the 2002 map compared to the 2012 map in terms of just gross numbers?
There is far more jurisdiction splits in this map than there was in the 2002 map. I don't have it in my fingertips, the exact numerical comparison. If I might reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Braden.
Good morning, Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
Counsel, would you agree that there is a duty to minimize the splits?
No.
No?
No. There is not a duty to minimize the splits. Most certainly, if we were in the court in Pennsylvania, there would be a duty to minimize the splits because the Pennsylvania Constitution has language that says absolute. There are a number of state constitutions cited in the briefs to this court that have that type of language requiring minimizing splits. But that is not the law in Ohio. Let me point out to this court that the actions of this apportionment board, both its process and its plan, are totally consistent with 40 years of precedent. Totally. You can search in vain in their briefs for one line that talks about what this apportionment board did and what this plan did and how this apportionment board interpreted the Constitution, and there's not one line in their briefs that shows any inconsistency. And this is not a partisan issue either.
When you say that, you're talking about historically there have been bad maps before. Is that what you're talking about? I remember the stovepipe district in the... It goes back probably two or three decades, but is that your argument? Is they ignored it, the mandate of the Constitution before, so it's okay to ignore it now?
No, absolutely not. There's the fact that it wasn't obeyed in the past doesn't mean it can be disobeyed now. But what I'm really saying is there's an important of historical precedent this court's got to consider in this process. And the reason for that is because this is such a complex, involved process. And that's easily illustrated. I would suggest to the court, when you look in the record, you see that the apportionment board received four plans. You know, there's a process in Ohio, there's a time of it. Four plans were received by the board. They were received in September and October time period. The actual data for these plans, the mechanics of how to draw the plans, were available to the citizens of Ohio in actually early March. That's when the census data came out. The mechanics of how to do this now, it's actually, in a sense, the data and the computer programs are available on laptops. They were all freely available to the citizens of Ohio. They're up on the web. There was even a contest with a cash prize for plans, But only four plans were submitted to the apportionment board. Three of those plans simply couldn't even have merited serious consideration because they failed the first test. The first test of a plan isn't the Ohio Constitution, which we've been talking about. It's the U.S. Constitution and federal statute. Three of the plans submitted to the board on their face were totally invalid because they violated the 14th Amendment and they violated the Voting Rights Act. So those three plans couldn't even be considered. In addition, they violated specific provisions of the Ohio Constitution.
Go back to the Chief Justice's question, though. You don't believe that Section 7B requires you to look at keeping counties whole first, thereby minimizing county splits?
Oh, it absolutely requires you to look at keeping county whole, but it's only part of a mosaic of other provisions that one has to look at. Most certainly.
You're saying, though, that there was no plan submitted that would split only 30 counties?
Oh, absolutely not.
And we shouldn't be making a finding that any plan can only split, that any future plan under this census could only split no more than 30 counties?
Of course, that's correct. It can't be. This is not a test. We could have a provision like you have in Pennsylvania, the absolute fewest. You do not have that provision here. You have provisions that require you to seek equality. You have a provision, 7D, that requires you to try to keep the districts relatively the same if that's an option. There are options available to the apportionment board. These numbers that we're talking about here and the proposals to these courts, I just shake my head in amazement at some of the arguments that I'm hearing. I hear an argument that you should look at the McDonald plan, and that tells you that you could have divided fewer counties.
Well,
and the answer is that plan's unconstitutional.
Whoa. You could look at the last plan, the plan that folks were elected on up to this election cycle. In fact, the Constitution talks about that, and there are a whole lot less splits, at least according to the Council for...
I do not believe that that is, in fact, correct, that there are significantly less splits.
Well, what's the answer to that?
The answer to the plan is that this plan is totally consistent with the prior plans and have roughly the same number of splits. It's not a test as to the number of splits. There's nothing in the Constitution about that. There's a series of requirements in the Constitution, but it's not splits. And we have an explanation as to why you could have fewer. But that explanation, which is the McDonald plan, is totally useless because the McDonald plan does not comply with a mandatory provision of the state constitution. 7C, unlike some of the other provisions which have language about feasibility reasonably consistent with, 7C has a specific language about dividing only one unit between two districts. We've repeatedly, in every single brief filed in this court, we pointed out the fact that in two counties, the McDonald plan violates the 7C single unit provision. There is not a line of response in their briefs on that point. Their plan is unconstitutional on its face on a provision that's clearly mandatory. How does that plan provide any basis for you to decide we split too many counties?
So you're saying that 7C is the trump section here?
No.
And that will trump the number of county splits, you know, as long as you don't split a unit between two districts, whether it be a township or a municipality. As long as you don't do that, you can slice and dice the county any way you want.
No, absolutely, you can't slice and dice the county any way you want. Every district we have, except in those counties which are too large to be a single district, every single district in the state meets the requirement of 7A. Every district has one whole county. That's the requirement of 7A. How we then go down and take 7A, B, and C and conform it with either 3, make them more substantially equal, or conform it with D, try to keep the districts relatively the same. Take a look again at the McDonald plan, which is the explanation to you as to why
are you
can
asking us to compare the apportionment board plan with the McDonald plan?
I don't ask you. I think you should totally ignore the McDonald plan because
it
was
you
not
just told
provided.
Us to take a look at it.
Well, the reason why I say take a look at it is that's the only argument
you
before
agree
this
the
court.
Issue is whether or not the plan submitted by the apportionment board is constitutional. Isn't that our issue?
Absolutely. And this plan is constitutional. It meets the requirements of the Constitution with one exception, and that being in northeastern Ohio.
If I'm hearing what you're arguing, you're saying our plan may not conform because of splits, but their plan, the McDonald plan, doesn't conform because of a violation of 7C. So
then
that's
I'm missing
an argument for us. What we're trying to figure out is what is the basis to determine the constitutionality of the plan submitted by the apportionment board. Maybe you can help us with that issue.
Oh, absolutely. The answer is the plan submitted by the apportionment board complies with all requirements of the Ohio Constitution except for one.
Which is that?
Which is in northeastern Ohio. The district, the Senate district that includes Lake County, Lake County is in two separate Senate districts. That provision, everyone in this case admits, as was the case before the apportionment board, it is impossible to draw that section of the state.
In the Voinovich case, there was a determination of this court that several sections of the Article 11 were co-equal. Is it your view that sections 7, 9, and 10 are co-equal?
Yes. You go through a process here. Some are co-equal. Some are discretionary. And some are mandatory. And you walk through the process. What's the first step in the process? Well, the first step in the process is three. Well, actually, the first step in the process is assuring compliance with the requirements of the U.S. Constitution and the Voting Rights Act. Once you get past that, then you come for the lodestar of all redistricting, which is population equality. So under Section 3, the apportionment board has the discretion to draw districts to make them more substantially equal. We don't have, as we could have in the Constitution, language that says you shall draw districts between 95 and 105% of the ideal number, although we see sort of archaic language here about ratios normally, and people talk about an ideal number. We don't have that. We have language that gives the board discretion to draw districts closer to the equality. Then we have Section 7, which talks about an order in which we should attempt to follow political subdivision lines. And then we have a provision, which I believe is co-equal. There's no language here saying it's not co-equal, about keeping these districts relatively the same. And then we have the actual process of drawing the lines appears in 10, which is an ordering process. You start with Wayne County, the only county close enough. Then you go to those counties which are discretionary under 10, which you may or may not have as whole counties.
But you don't consider that to be the guidepost. The county's integrity as far as minimizing the splits of the counties first. You don't consider that to be the guiding force, and then you go down to the townships and the cities and the wards?
Well, the guiding force is always population.
Well, I know the population. That's a given.
And then, absolutely, there is a first step when drawing districts, assuming we're talking about a district which is, in fact, not too large to be a district. The process actually, there's an ordering process, so you do these individual counties.
What's your ordering process?
Well, you start with Wayne County. The ordering process is set forth in 10. You start with Wayne County. Then you go through the next five counties, which are the counties.
So you do start with counties.
Oh, absolutely, because 10 specifically tells you.
Exactly. So when we talk about the duty to minimize the splits, you do start with a duty to minimize the splits for the counties.
Well, you start with a duty set forth in 10. 10 sets forth an ordering process where you draw, based in 10, you draw first the single county. So we talked in the brief about.
But, Council, 10 clearly is subservient to 3 and 7.
Oh.
And it seemed to me, at least in the early briefing, you were hanging your hat on justifying this by trying to give 10 superiority over 3 and 7. And it seems when you read 10, it's absolutely clear that that's simply a process of numbering districts.
Well, the process of numbering districts and ordering districts isn't just a process of that. That actually determines how the districts are drawn. Let me use an example that was used by council, which is district number 70. The numbering process tells you, if you go through 10, as you walk through it, you do the single counties, you do the discretionary counties, which is a perfect example of why this Constitution doesn't talk about the minimum number of county splits, because it's clear. Columbiana County, the board had the discretion to divide Columbiana County if it decided to. I mean, that's clearly said may. So it's clearly may not. Is the implication. So we could have actually divided Columbiana County, but Columbiana County was kept whole as a discretionary decision of the board under 10. So you walk through Columbiana County, then under 10, you go to the largest county in the state, Cuyahoga County, and you draw all the districts you can draw in Cuyahoga County. Then you walk through and then you go to the Franklin County, you go to Hamilton County, and you walk through the process. And as you go through this process, you...
But you're putting 10 ahead of 3 and 7. And I don't see how any fair reading of the Constitution does that. It's the other way around.
I don't think you put it ahead, but I think 10 mandates the order in which you draw the districts. It does do that. And what I'm saying is you walk through this process, you get to the situation where you will be required to divide up counties.
Well, we understand that you have to divide.
Absolutely.
Counties, but I'm still stuck on your answer to the chief's question.
Well, I'm not sure that what I'm saying is we absolutely have to divide counties. Absolutely. Well, but the process requires us, because of the geography of the state, we absolutely have to divide up counties. So it's not a process where we have to get to the absolute smallest number of counties. That's not the Ohio process. We could have that language, but we don't have that. But we do have a requirement to attempt to keep counties whole. And if you walk through the process
again. We have a requirement to attempt to keep counties whole.
Absolutely.
Which you don't translate as an obligation to minimize county splits.
Not to the exclusion of everything else, no. There most certainly.
Doesn't take priority in your analysis of this problem.
Well, and let me use one particular.
Would be a reason that we wouldn't keep a county whole?
Population.
Okay, say it
70.
Has a population.
Okay.
Say,
70.
Say it,
70.
Because clearly it's been demonstrated, and we don't have to say that we're going to put a stamp of approval on one plan over another. You know, I understand that, and I'm not attempting that. But when you start with the premise that counties are to remain whole, if at all possible, and we see a plan that will split 50 counties, and we see a plan that will do only 30, how are we to then say, well, the 50-county plan, splitting 50 counties is better or is constitutional, when the argument is we couldn't do it any other way. We have to violate the Constitution, so we're going to do it 50 times as opposed to 30 times.
And dividing up 50 counties is not 50 violations of the Constitution. That should be clear. Many of the counties have to be divided of population. Then you get to, quote-unquote, discretionary divisions. The answer is they're discretionary in the sense of choosing which counties potentially, but most of those absolutely have to be divided.
And your ability to make that choice, your rationale for making that choice is based on political advantage.
That is absolutely not correct.
That's not the case here?
Again, let me use one example, the example that was put forth by the relators here, which is District 70. And if you happen to have a map before you, which I would suggest you could look at Exhibit B-15, and you look at District 70, which has a screenshot of District 70. And let's walk through the process here and explain why Holmes County is divided. If you go through the ordering process in 10, you eventually get to number 69, Medina County. Medina County is too large to be a district. So it has to be divided. That doesn't violate the Constitution. It has to be divided. That leaves you a leftover piece that has to go somewhere. If you sort of look at the numbers around it, you can see that there aren't many options as to where that goes. Because Wayne and Richland already exist. They've got lower numbers. They're mandated. You see the same thing with Huron. You look all around, and there's really not much left because all the numbers are basically lower. So the existing district in this area already combines Medina with the whole county of Ashland. So drawing this district, you combine this with the whole county of Ashland. Not many options. So you have the whole county requirement of 7A, but it doesn't have enough people in it. What do we do to comply with 3? We have to get a piece from somewhere. Where do we get it from? In the prior plan, Holmes was part of this district. In fact, all of Holmes was part of this district. So we split Holmes to make this comply with 3. Now, could it have been done a different way? Sure. If you start all over again, and you draw a whole series of different districts, you can come up with a plan that doesn't divide Holmes. But I'm asking you, you have to look at this as not one district. You have to look at it. We drew this plan for 2 constitutional reasons this way. One, to make it more equal. It's more equal than the McDonald provisions on these districts, which is the mandate of 3. The mandate of 3 isn't keep it between these two numbers. It's to make it more close to equal.
Counsel, their argument, we seem to be mostly talking about the more rural parts of Ohio,
sure,
the whole counties, and not much discussion at all of the urban areas and how the plan splits those up, although I suppose that goes into the gross numbers that they talk about. The Voting Rights Act. Is there any impact on these rural counties of the Voting Rights Act? In other words, are you trying at all to justify 50 versus the academic excellence award of 30 splits based on the Voting Rights Act?
Well, again, I go back to the point, the 30 split plan is irrelevant because it violates other provisions of the Constitution. But assuming for hypothetical purposes you could come up with some other plan that have a lower split number, the voting rights issues actually go more to the notion of the contiguous and non-contiguous pieces. If we were to reinterpret the Constitution in a different manner than the last 4 apportionment boards have and decide that the pieces that have been divided up in Franklin County by the citizens of Franklin County, these non-contiguous pieces, should be combined back together under here, that would present extreme difficulties under the Voting Rights Act
so,
to comply with.
But for purposes of what the battle seems to be about today, the Voting Rights Act overlay is really not...
It's not, Your Honor, it's not significant in rural areas of the state. The Voting Rights Act issues usually arise in the context of urban areas. In Cuyahoga County, it's very clear that there had to be a Senate district that was majority-minority under any reasonable interpretation of the Voting Rights Act. That's the reason why the various plans that were submitted was not constitutional. I have doubts about the McDonald plan and the voting rights, although those are closer to the issue as to whether they comply or not. They're much more complicated. But if in this particular case, for the rather than the rural areas, Voting Rights Act doesn't have much implication.
Counsel,
there.
This record is massive, and so I don't recall whether it's in there. And perhaps this, I just recall reading a newspaper account that some Illinois legislator won a competition. Was that for the apportionment, or was that for the congressional redistricting?
My memory escapes me, but I think actually it's for, I think it was, and I think it was an Indiana legislator, but I could, one of those I states.
Yeah.
But I believe one of the winning, and I can't remember, was the congressional or the legislative plan. But winning in the sense that it looked nice, it met their criteria. It unfortunately, as Senator Niehaus, it must have been, in fact, about, it must have been the legislative plan. Senator Niehaus observed, it's nice that you're a nice academic plan, and unfortunately didn't comply with the requirements of the Ohio Constitution or the federal Constitution. So what, ultimately, in a sense, what we're saying here is, and this, clearly this body has the responsibility as to how the Constitution be interpreted.
Does it make a difference, given the four plans that were submitted? I know one of the things, the Ohio Constitution provides that there's going to be members from each of the two major political parties. That way you get complete and full input, ideally. You might have a 4-1 split like we do here, or you might have a 3-2, but the idea is everybody gets input. And there were four plans, and this was the only plan left standing. Does that make a difference in this case?
I believe it does. I believe that there was a deadline provided for the submission of plans. So I believe anything submitted after that simply is irrelevant for this court's consideration. Now, I'm not saying that, and I won't argue to this court, that if a plan submitted to the apportionment board was unconstitutional, that this court should accept that plan as adopted by the apportionment board. I don't make that argument. But I do make the argument that this is a complex process with a series of different steps. And this court should seriously consider deferring to those individuals and their interpretation of the Constitution unless there has been provided to this court beyond a reasonable doubt evidence that this has been violated. And that's not what's presented in this record to this court. It's not a race to the fewest number of splits because you have all these other considerations that are out there.
So I was going to say your view in interpreting Article 11 is that Section 10 talks about the ordering process that should be used and that Section 3 says definitely the population is the mandate that must govern. And Section 7, if you look at A through D, all has language that relates to discretion to the extent consistent in A, feasibly be obtained in B, feasibly be obtained in C, and then reasonably consistent in D. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding, and that's really the understanding of the last four apportionment boards, which, again, it's not a partisan decision as to how to interpret these provisions. The last four apportionment boards, two were controlled by Republicans, two were controlled by Democrats. They take a look at the process, who we have on this apportionment board. I think you all know, obviously, but let's walk through it. These are three statewide elected officials and the legislative leadership of the state. They have been provided this responsibility. You can look in vain in the U.S. Supreme Court jurisprudence in this area to try to find a case where somewhere in the first two, three, four paragraphs, not even pages of their opinion, they don't point out that this is a political process and you only enter it reluctantly. So, unless you have presented to you beyond a reasonable doubt proof that we violated it, you need to affirm this plan. That's not what's presented to you.
So, Council, let me understand. You're saying that the overriding, overarching directive intent when starting this process was to look at Section 3 and figure out geographically how you can meet the dictates of that section.
Absolutely.
All right. And the fact that there's evidence that it's, this is really great because we're able to fashion a districts and we're going to give one political party a distinct advantage. That was just accidental.
Well, two things. One, I'm really at a loss to find that evidence. I don't believe that's in the record. I don't believe there's record that this is any type of partisan gerrymandering. There's a lot of ways to look at partisan gerrymandering, lots of tests, relationships, the seats and votes, irregular-looking districts, unfair pairing of incumbents. You don't see any of that in this case. You see a couple emails back and forth, and you see the fact that they use political data. What a shock. The original version of the brief I was going to send to this court talked about Casablanca and the inspector being shocked to find out that there was gambling in the back room. Well, this court can't possibly be shocked to think that there's politics in this process and that, in fact, political data was used.
But there's not a claim for equal protection here, is there?
Absolutely not.
So it's irrelevant, isn't it?
It is absolutely irrelevant. And I would suggest that the testimony you actually have, this only sworn testimony you have from the people who drafted this plan, is express and clear. Was politics considered? Yes. But it wasn't even a secondary consideration. It was a tertiary consideration. Let's just be practical. Why would you want to draw a plan that achieved political goals that was unconstitutional to be thrown out by this court? The first goal of this process
is that even though we're splitting more than 50 counties, more than half the counties in this state, that there was no way to comply with Section 7B without splitting 50 counties.
Is this the minimum number of counties that could, in any circumstances, be split? The answer to that is, with a constitutional plan, I don't know the answer to that. I see no evidence in the record that, in fact, that's the case. There's no evidence before the court that that's the case because you have no plans before you that split fewer counties that are constitutional. So I don't know that that couldn't be done, but think of the process here if that's going to be the standard. I mean, first of all, that's the standard in Pennsylvania. If we amended our constitution here and added absolute, maybe we'd get there. But do we really want a situation that 2 years from now, if you adopted the McDonald plan, that plan would become unconstitutional because somebody came up with a plan that divided 94 counties? Political subdivisions rather than 95.
But we're not required to adopt the McDonald plan to find this plan unconstitutional. What we're required to do is look at Section 7B, and while I hear your argument that there's no requirement that we keep the fewest number of counties intact, when I read this section, it says you start with keeping counties whole. And your argument would be out of 88 counties, we could only keep 38 counties whole in this state.
That's correct. And if you walk through the process, I think it's understandable why, as you walk through the process, as I did with one district, why that's the case. As you go through the process, many of the counties are automatically divided. After that, you have to divide other counties for population reasons, or as in the case here in Holmes, when we went through the 70 example, which is not something I just pulled out that's useful to me. That's their example to you as to why we violated it.
So if I can come up with a plan that splits less counties but is unconstitutional for other reasons, there's no reason for this court to look at it or regard it?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And what I'm saying to this court, it isn't just...
There's no evidence before the court as to how many counties you can get down to with a constitutional plan.
That is absolutely correct. There's no reason... Nothing before this court, and I believe it's beyond a reasonable doubt standard, which is virtually the universal standard when reviewing these plans across the country. Virtually the universal standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. Do you have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that, in fact, we violated the state constitution? And the answer to that is you do not have in the record before you that.
Before you sit down, Mr. Braden, would you address the fact that there are only four members of the apportionment board before the court?
If I'd been plaintiff's relator's counsel to this, I would have sued the apportionment board and all members.
Is the board before this court, in your view?
I think there's some question as to whether that's the case or not. We did not bring that. Frankly, the reason why we did not raise that argument is that we were confident in the constitutionality of this plan and didn't want there to be any doubts floating around in the process to be delayed. Most certainly the prudent, proper course of action, in my view, would have been to sue the apportionment board and sue all the members of the apportionment
board. But in your brief, you can see that the court has jurisdiction.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mr. Hamilton, you've used up all but a little over 2 minutes, so you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. What the board did in 2011 was unprecedented. The argument before you today is that there were options available that this court should defer to the apportionment board on a beyond the reasonable doubt standard. First of all, that is not the universal standard. In every case cited by counsel, that was a case involving legislative redistricting. This is not a redistricting plan done by the legislature. It certainly is not an appropriate standard here. Article 11 gives this court final say over the application of this board and the obligation and duty to review that plan against the constitutional standard.
Although, counsel, we are not expected to review every single plan as some states are.
That's correct, Your Honor. Unlike,
there has,
for example,
to be a challenge first.
Exactly, okay. Your Honor. Unlike, say, for example, the state of Florida. But that doesn't affect the standard because the difference between the deference counsel argues for and the deference that's appropriate here flows from the fact this is not a legislative function because it's not a legislatively adopted plan.
Counsel, I'd like to refer you to Section 3, the population requirements, because I still have a question in my mind about how significant that constitutional provision is over the others. The section itself indicates that districts shall be drawn, and I'm trying to flip to it here quickly, substantially equal to the ratio of representation. And then it talks about in no event, and then it talks about except in another section where you can try to keep a county whole. Most of the provisions in 7 refer back to Section 3. And as I look at Section 3, it seems to me the ultimate goal is to get as close to population equality as possible. Would you comment, and I know there's been some in the brief, but I'm still not entirely clear, why isn't that the predominant characteristic? And when it talks about if feasible, reasonable efforts, whatever, why don't those all yield to if you've tried to keep the population ideal?
And the answer is, Your Honor, Section 3 says substantially equal and then goes on to define what that means, 95 to 105% of...
It says in no event. I don't know if that's a definition of it.
I think that's...
Isn't it substantially equal to the ratio representation? That seems to me to be the outer limit.
Sure. In that, it says the population of each Senate district shall be substantially equal. If the goal was to try and achieve exact numerical equality between the districts, that's easy to do. It's easy to do. You just split every county,
We can look at our congressional districts, and they're really a model of work, aren't they?
I'd prefer not to comment on that, Your Honor.
That matter's not before the court.
I agree with that. The point is, in order to achieve exact equality is easy. You split every ward. You split every city.
Well,
and this article doesn't allow the board to do
that. It doesn't say exact. It says substantially, and then it provides an outer limit. But and there's some kind of discretionary language. That's what I'm having a little trouble with. Why doesn't that discretionary language in 7 kind of yield so that you can split if you try, if one of the purposes is to get to closer to population equality?
I don't agree that it's with, I think the policy established by Section 3 is that they shall be substantially equal, and I think the range defines what that means, 95 to 105. And then the overriding policy, and Ohio is not unique. A number of states have the similar requirement, and for obvious reasons, of not splitting county or political subdivision lines. That is good public policy to avoid doing that. And unfortunately, what we have here is the board minimizing that requirement and placing over it an objective to achieve a political partisan ends. And I was a little surprised to hear counsel suggest that the record doesn't contain any evidence. The record is overwhelming that political considerations, and I point the court to document 787 attached to the Pierre-Louis declaration, in which the parties, the board is looking at different configurations of matchups of counties, which ones to split, and which ones are going to yield the best partisan advantage.
But you don't have an equal protection argument raised in the pleadings, as I recall?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. We don't. But the point is that political considerations cannot be used to trump, in other words, as an excuse for splitting county or political subdivision lines that don't need to be split. That's not an equal protection claim.
Would you agree that Professor McDonald's plan's got some constitutional issues?
No, I don't, Your Honor. The issue that counsel raised, the 7C violation, I think he pointed out, that is the one area where the Voting Rights Act actually did require splitting two political subdivisions. And if that's a violation, I find it really odd to find counsel arguing that position, because if that's a violation, then there are literally dozens and dozens of similar violations in the adopted plan by the board. So obviously that's not the position that that they took. The Voting Rights Act has really been trotted out in the briefing here as something of a red herring and a threat to this court. The Voting Rights Act, to be clear, never requires a state to draw a boundary if it can't draw a majority-minority district. Anything less than 50%, and the Voting Rights Act is silent. That's Bartlett versus Strickland, and ever since that case by the United States Supreme Court, it's been clear there is no mandate under the Voting Rights Act to draw influence districts, or as counsel pointed out, to try and make it 13.1% instead of 12.8%. That is simply a red herring. The Voting Rights Act says nothing about that.
Counsel, you've used your time.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. You're excused.
I think she's going right into
recess.
We're going to have a presentation of counsel.